What's the Indian social development within this world program through policy development, review and implementation support for services is the most important program to the committee to complete. HIV and AIDS is one of the 12 sub-programs and receives the second largest allocation. It's 58.22 million in 2007-2008. This increases to 65.47 million in 2009-2010. The board states that this sub-program monitors and facilitates social welfare services for those affected by HIV and AIDS. Under recent output, the vote states that a draft community-based care and support services model has been developed and that consultations are taking place with provinces and other stakeholders. The document also reports research.
The first rule is that your cell phone should be on silent. If you've got a problem of pressing the set part silent, you can switch it off. Safety first. You switch it off. May we have the energy intensive user group, introduce yourself and you can start. Thanks.
Thank you. First of all, that's an introduction to the EIUG. Then some general comments on the National Energy Bill, and then some specific comments, which one would hope could be used later. So, what is the EIUG? It's an association of large, energy-intensive consumers. So, membership of the group consists of about 35 of the country's largest energy users. The combined consumption is in excess of 40%. Of the total electricity consumption in South Africa. Energy is a primary input to all of these organizations who are dependent on quality and affordable electricity for their survival and growth. The EIUG, as in the past, pledges the support of the considerable experience of its members to the aims of the bill. However, the bill makes no provision for stakeholder input into energy policy or planning formulation, which is fundamental to the growth of the EIUG member companies, many of whom represent South African opportunity relative to other international opportunity. The EIUG believes a more inclusive stakeholder policy will improve South African growth prospects, particularly during these energy constrained times. It is the experience of the EIUG membership that energy permeates all activities in the modern world and cannot be seen in isolation. Hence, repeats the request for stakeholder input into energy policy and planning formulation to improve South African growth prospects with constrained energy resources. Some general comments. The EIOG is of the opinion that NERSA should have the role of collection and collation of energy data and the determination if any application is in the public interest. The establishment of National Energy Modelling and Information Agency will compromise the independence of NERSA, lead to duplication of effort and confusion of outcomes. The EIG welcomes the concept of integrated planning, but repeats the request for suitable legislation to be enacted to ensure stakeholder involvement in this regard. To ensure electricity security, which is an objective of the bill, the EIEG believes that in terms of the current electricity supply industry model, Eskom is the electricity supplier and is responsible to ensure that it is made provision to meet the electricity demand of the country in both the long and the short term. Some specific comments, largely under definitions. The definition of energy data is too broad and consequently provides the minister with powers beyond the required jurisdiction, which might lead to unintended consequences. The definition of energy efficiency is unclear. Environmentally sensitive is open to subjective application. As regards safety, health and environment, the Ministry of Transport should be included. Go back to the National Energy and Modelling Agency. This function should be performed by NERSA. The National Energy Development Institute. This institute should be funded from the fiscus, as it has other non-energy benefits. As regards measures to promote the use of renewable energy, the minister should be required to consult with all affected sectors. Goes back to the nature of South African industry. It's different to most in other parts of the world, particularly as regards renewables. Each individual application is unique and subject to specific challenges, and wide consultation is necessary for maximum positive impact. Measures to promote energy efficiency. The minister is empowered to prescribe individual minimum levels of energy efficiency for particular sections in conjunction with the SABS. That's suited to consumer products, but it requires considerable interaction with large industrial stakeholders to prevent disruption of the economy in imposing energy efficiency criteria. It is recommended that this clause be modified to ensure adequate consultation so as to positively affect the economy. That are the key points of the EIG's presentation. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much. Can I tell you that? Because the follow is a grilling session.
That's fine.
but because you conducted yourself today, I don't think members are ready to grill you. Members, do you have any questions to ask? Continuation, but because I see that you just came today, And normally we give the members an opportunity to ask, you note their questions, and from there you'll be afforded the opportunity to answer. Okay.
And then also say, you're speaking about public participation or civil rights or what they call. In what form maybe you want it in this bill? How you see the users association you coming from must be presented on this bill? Okay, thank you. Let's take the transport question first. Transport is extremely integrated into the energy equation. For instance, the taxi recapitalization program transfers the fuel in the taxi industry from gasoline, petrol, to diesel. And that shifts the balance in the country by about 20%. So where there was a ratio of 50-50 between petrol and diesel consumption, the ratio would now swing to of the order 60-40 to diesel relative to petrol. And that has a significant impact on the refinery industry and the ability of the country to actually supply both diesel and gasoline, petrol to the economy. So, that's the reason that the Ministry of Transport should be included in any discussions around energy issues. As regards how one would see stakeholder participation, it's our experience that in particularly working with NERSA from a technical perspective and also with in working with Eskom from a technical perspective, the concept of having working groups that review the problem and formulate a variety of different solutions, and when I say working groups, that's not restricted to the energy intensive users groups. There are others that have particular interests. It's the formulation of those working groups in order to solve a common problem. For instance, the taxi recapitalization program, bringing in the fuel industry to identify the effects of the fuel variation on the refinery industry and the import of fuel would be a classical example, but that rolls into many other applications.
Thank you, Chair. I heard you saying that you thought that the establishment of this agency to you it's redundant. You say that you prefer that NERSA, it will interfere with NERSA. Can you elaborate that? Why you think so?
Thank you. I believe that we as the group believe that for NERSA to do its job effectively, and we also believe that they, like other national regulatory bodies, are effectively above, they're an institution unaffected by political issues, etc., much like the courts. That's the perception of the modern way for regulation to be done in the energy industry, certainly in Europe, because there's so many cross-border components that come into the issue, and we will see that in Southern Africa as well, that it's important that in NERSA, obtaining its basic information, its raw data, it needs to be able to do that itself, because it needs to be able to audit the entire process, as opposed to it being given those numbers by another state institution, because that could be seen to be untrue or perhaps not representative of the real figures, in that there isn't an audit trail for NERSA to go from the basic data to the ability to make decisions off its own data.
Just want to check if I know that you want to make a follow up on this issue.
So yeah, maybe have I explained myself clearly?
Guys,
sure.
Yes, those are my can you procedure.
No, I to me it sounds as if you are confusing the issues, but that's why probably I need it. That's why this follow-up, so that you clarify me. You are talking about this agency as a new agency to regulate energy. As far as I have understood, it's not going to be regulating. The role of regulation still remains with NERSA. There may be overlapping roles between NERSA and this institution in terms of other things which are nothing to do with regulation but are to do about correct and useful strategic planning. As far as I understand, this entity or agent is supposed to be concerned with strategic planning and coordination of energy security in the whole country. And still subject to the rules and regulations as applied by NERSA. So data collection is part of modeling because they can't model without sufficient correct data and so forth. But NERSA may also have its role in when it has to get data from somewhere when it wants also to make its regulations effective. And probably where there is some data coincidence, then they discuss at that level. But what is important here, as far as I understand, is that this institute is like a think tank of energy rather than a regulator of energy. But do you understand it in that way?
I understand it partially in that way. But my concern is, first of all, with the raw data, to make sure that the raw data, in my belief, should be something like Stats SA. It should be beyond reproach, and to my mind, that should be gathered by a NERSA. The fact that the energy modeling uses those figures, I believe that is a good thing, and we have said that we believe that the energy security modeling is important, and that can be an aside issue that is done separate to that from NERSA. The concern that we have is the gathering of the raw data and making sure that there's only one set, effectively, of raw data that's gathered. Whereas at the present time, certainly in the electrical sector, there are three sets of data that are gathered.
Yeah, let's not... maybe the... The important thing is that, you see, there was a presentation which was made by the department, which gives an overview and an explanation on how the National Energy Bill will work. Somewhere it is said that the bill itself is not meant to replace other institutions and legislation in existence. Other legislations which became before are actually about the past and the present, but the National Energy Bill is about the future. So it's important that you should understand how NERSA regulates and how it concentrates on electricity. Now the Energy Bill takes everything into consideration, which has a bearing on energy. That's why I think there is this misunderstanding in saying what would be the role of NERSA and what would be the role of the National Energy Bill. So for now we can investigate all other issues, because the National Energy Bill is actually an interface in making sure that it becomes the center of all other bills and legislations in existence, which has a bearing on gas, on electricity, on oil, etc. But the bill itself is meant to bring together everything which was put forth in the past and which exists now. But it makes sure that it puts a way forward for the future, or it shows a way forward for the future. So maybe you can make a comment around that.
Thank you for that opportunity. I think the concern that we have is that interface area, to make sure that in the energy bill having an overriding and all-encompassing component, that it doesn't eliminate the good that some of the existing bills pull in, and that there are gaps left. That is the concern.
Because it doesn't replace, it doesn't cancel, it reinforces what is the good which exists. Saying that, I agree with you in the way you've captured it. Personally, I think that's the understanding. And I understand it exactly as you said.
Thank you. The concern, once again, is the ability of stakeholders that identify gaps to have the opportunity to highlight those gaps. That interface, I think, is missing. And that is a concern.
Usually we know in the committee there are problems when we have stakeholders who have missed other sessions, because we can't go back to sessions of yesterday where all those matters were covered, you see. It's just that you have to, I think, equip yourself with the document of since Monday, where the department covers most of the questions we are asking are covered in that. And most of the questions, even the one that I asked you, was very much dealt with yesterday. But that's why I wanted to have your, because we are not here, I wanted your opinion. Maybe you can add value to what was discussed yesterday. That's why I ask you to have the opinion about the interference between this institute and NERSA, because it was very well covered yesterday. But I would advise myself through the chair that you do read some of the inputs that the other stakeholders have, in particular the department, about how it intends to coordinate this energy planning using this bill.
Sure.
I think most of your questions will be answered.
Chair, just maybe for information, the document the department gives us, maybe you can get it from the department. On page 15, they explain how it's going to work. So if you can get this document, maybe this just from the department, it will help you a lot.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. I'm very happy to hear that then. Thank you.
I only wanted to reiterate exactly what the members have said, because we had a very long discussion. We had about 9 presentations yesterday, and we were able to collate some of the facts if they were not clear. Like yesterday, there was a group which was asking questions around definition of energy data. It was like the group was saying it's cumbersome, it's not clear. Then with the definition of energy itself, energy, what is energy? And that group wanted to raise issues around crude oil, because in the bill it's not clear that crude oil is part of energy, because there is no clear definition. You see, but we know that in terms of definition, energy, it's all-encompassing and all-embracing. So if you have to define it here, you may have a definition which takes 3 pages in the bill, and that is not the intention. So I just want to say that in the absence of any question, What we want to do is to thank you for making this presentation. The committee is going to sit and apply its mind and make a determination. In as far as the you see the issues you've advised the committee to do, then it means some of the issues if they are not part of the bill, then we can embrace them. But if there are other problems, then it's fine. But we just want to thank you for making the presentation.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity.
Thanks. And may we now have because I called earlier on the Third World Investment Gateway, was it there? So we don't have it. We have sustainable energy. Anyway, we have the South African Climate Action Network just sitting there next to the presentation. South African Climate Action Network, do we have it here? It's not here. Then are we going to have, is Earth Life Africa Johannesburg here? Not here. Better sit next to the presenter as well. He finishes, then you can join. Oh, no problem. Yeah. And that is Sustainable Energy Africa. May we kindly have an introduction of your team, and from there you can start with the presentation.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. My name is Vuyile Mabota from Sustainable Energy Africa. I'm with my colleagues here. Next to me is Megan Easton Brown and Yatsika Reddy and Ludem Bele. So they will be helping or assisting me with your grilling questions. Basically, we've submitted the written comments on the National Energy Bill, but then we've pulled out key or core issues that we wanted to raise in this meeting today. Basically, Sustainable Energy Africa is a non-profit organization. We promote sustainable energy approaches and practices in the development of South Africa and Africa as a whole. We've also contributed to energy policy development in South Africa and in Africa, in other African countries. We also leading 50 energy support organizations. We do those three, capacity building and networking. We also author of leading South African energy publications like the New Energy Book and the State of Energy of South African Cities. Basically, we looked at the objectives of the Act, and we've realized or found that the issues of poverty, environment, and access are not put forward. So we do acknowledge the fact that energy security is being highlighted as important in the bill, but then we're saying that this should not be at the expense of poor people or the environment. So in our written submission, we've reordered the objectives, putting up front the socio-economic and environmental issues. And we also propose, or we also saying that the objective of the 2004 draft energy bill should come again in this new energy bill as a first objective, because it sort of covers most of the access, equity, and environmental issues. And then in terms of access, Chapter 2 of the bill, there's a mention of the universal access to energy. We do welcome this as per the constitutional right of South Africa. And then in Section 5.1 of the Act, we're saying that this sentence should read as access to appropriate forms of energy and energy services. So we're saying we should include energy services. And then in our return comments, we've provided you with a definition of energy services. Basically, you should include other forms of energy, such as thermally efficient housing, such as putting your ceiling in your houses, etc. And also in Section 5.2b of the Act reads as follows. The program must take into account the availability of resources. And then we're saying this must be replaced with the equitable sharing of resources among all residents of South Africa, taking the equity issues into account and making this very broad, because the availability of resources is not very broad. And then in terms of the National Energy Modeling and Information Agency, we welcome you. The introduction of optimization modeling is set up in the bill, so we do welcome this. But then at the same time, we're saying that the bill should also include scenario modeling. The first modeling, optimization modeling, is basically giving the decision maker, it provides the decision makers with one optimal scenario. So the other modeling, the scenario modeling, is providing decision makers with a variety of possible scenarios. So in that way, it will help the decision makers to make a decision, a well-informed decision. So we're proposing that these two, we welcome the first modeling, and then we should also include the second modeling, which is scenario modeling. And then the function of NEMIA, as I call it, is also to develop energy greenhouse gas emission mitigation. We're saying that we do welcome the role of DME in all national initiatives relating to climate change mitigation. But we're saying that DET has been the lead agent on climate change. So we're saying that the role and powers and functions of DET must not be in any way be undermined in the bill. Also, we also think that there must be a strong link to cities, because really cities must be given a mandate to collect energy information, because really cities are intensive nodes of energy consumption and important sites for energy planning and management. So we really think that cities should really be included or given a mandate to collect information under this agency. Also, as widely known, informal settlements are a permanent and significant part of South Africa's landscape. It is important that there is adequate and updated data on energy welfare in these areas. So this will really assist decision makers in managing or when planning energy in these areas. So in chapter 4 is the concept of integrated energy planning. I quote, in order to avoid turning back the clock on progressive energy planning approaches, the bill needs to be extremely clear as to the planning approach to be adopted within its integrated energy master plan. Historically, energy master plan is really focused on the supply side of energy planning, not really on demand. So we're saying that this should be clear as to as your approach. How is the bill going to address the issue of, we need it to be clear what the energy master plan is about. But then ideally we're saying that this should be an integrated energy plan as per the 2004 draft bill. And then we do welcome the two institutions introduced in the bill. But then we're saying that these two new institutions should work hand in hand with the existing institution, like South Saner, for example. So they should be, they shouldn't do the same kind of work. So they should really liaise with each other. And then we have the issue of capacity again, human capacity, especially when it comes to the energy sector. We don't have people with skills in the energy sector. So it's important for the minister to ensure that these new institutions are well-staffed. And because really you can't have an institution and then you only have one permanent staff in that institution. So really we need capacity. These things should be taken into consideration when running this institution. Also, the issue of funding. The bill should ensure that parity of funding between renewable energy and energy efficiency and all other energy sources are funded. So the new institution, FANIT, as I call it, should be the leading energy research institute and not the poor cousin of coal-fired electricity and nuclear energy. Yeah, and thank you very much.
Yes. Thank you very much. Before we could maybe give the opportunity to members to ask questions, there is a presentation which is made by the department. If you can get a copy, I think the department has made it available. It deals with the objects of the Act. The first object is to ensure an uninterrupted supply of energy to the Republic. So when we ensure uninterrupted supply of energy to the Republic, it means it takes into consideration the rich, the poor, the old, and the young. So that part should be noted. Such that when you explain the reconfiguration of the objects in the bill, because you say it should be reconfigured, because it disregards socio-economic conditions, the issues around poverty and environment. I'm sure that yesterday we had an intensive discussion around the poor communities, reaching out to the poor communities, and at the same time making sure that they will put a serious consideration on the issues of environment, such that whatever we do, we should not find the environmental situation affected. So that's the issue. So here you've got all the objects here, but they strike a balance. And at the same time, the economic system in South Africa, it will try as much as possible to satisfy the poor. But the mode of production in South Africa is a capitalist mode of production. But the Department of Education and the state will strive as much as possible in making sure that it supplies an uninterrupted energy to everybody in the Republic. So that issue should look into it in terms of how we define our society and how do we define our economy. Do we have questions, members. You will respond after all the members have raised their issues. No.
Yeah, no, this is just actually to facilitate the process. You have at least already highlighted very important points. I just want to appeal to members of the stakeholders who are here that they must not think that the process starts today. It started on Monday. Now, we have dealt with a lot of things that you may be bringing up here. It is good to bring them because we're not there, but in future it is very advisable when we have a process like this, a public hearing, to be present at all levels so that you know which is covered and which is not covered and how probably the ideas probably have been, how others in fact have even further input than the ideas that you have. It's very, very important. For instance, I just want to tackle the question of modeling, which you have just taken. You have highlighted two scenarios of modeling that this bill only highlights optimization modeling at the expense of scenario modeling. But you see, if you see in the Act of Parliament, you don't put the detail of activity, operational details of how things should be done. You put a model, which is going to be able to exist for a very long indefinite time without having to be really re-amended. Now, if you are talking about, for instance, scenario modeling, why do you exclude when they do these things numerical modeling? Why do you exclude analytic modeling? Why do you exclude analytical modeling? So there are many types of modeling that are going to be used on these people who will be developing the strategic planning of energy, which is a very technical exercise in its own right, but also, as the chair has just said, which also is going to be looking into the interest of the poor, because our government is poor, is biased to the poor. Yeah, it's a development asset biased to the poor. So I was just saying that if you have read also the document with this, which these people have, I mean the department has, it does highlight some of the things which are very important that they've highlighted, and they wouldn't be necessary to be brought to this platform. But nevertheless, modeling, as far as I'm concerned, is not supposed to be specific, because if you are saying that you are going to do modeling exercise, there are many scenarios and many different kinds of modeling that you need to use. And I think the bill is better captured as it is in its modeling exercise without specifically highlighting which type of modeling is supposed to be used. Thank you.
There are issues you raised around informal settlements. And you said that it's important that there should be adequate energy welfare and informal settlement. I'm not sure if your group also advocates for the existence of informal settlements. We know that half of the population lives in informal settlements, but informal settlements are informal townships, not approved by the law. So what do you do there when you deal with energy welfare? Interventions which you can make, how do you make those interventions? Because in terms of the law, you have to confirm or approve that settlement as a formal township as soon as people have applied for low-cost housing. And as soon as there's an approval and there are legal processes taking place, the state takes on an integrated approach wherein it puts on an infrastructure, it puts on electricity, it puts on very basic structures. So in your recommendation here is that as soon as those people have not moved into formal townships, government should have a way in which it makes intervention. So when it makes intervention, it means the government should wittingly or unwittingly accept that these people have to stay in that informal settlement, and of which that can be, that cannot be a good government, you know, approach, because in terms of government ethics, the government wants informal, to do away with informal settlements and making sure that every structure which exists in South Africa should be legally defined as townships. So I just want you to respond to some of the issues we've raised. In the absence of...
I just forgot one. There was one question here which I forgot to add. It was on the cities, the question which you raised on the cities. You were saying that about the cities. The cities have got to be given mandate to collect energy data, isn't it? That's what you're saying. I'm sure that may be so, but I am very worried about, you see, already the cities have got, they've got a constitutional mandate that they are supposed to be doing, but they have abused it. They have abused it. And that is why we are in a process of formulating a bill which is going to curb that abuse of power by cities, which is a constitutional mandate that they were given. I think you are aware of that. What do you think about that?
Thank you, Chair. Maybe if you could somehow speak to the question of capacity vis-a-vis skills. Because energy matters are really, there are those skills that we don't have. So that we don't end up looking only at the department. When you talk capacity, it's like it's only the department that must have that capacity. As role players, how do you look at that and add value to with regard to that issue? Thanks.
Yeah, the last point is that according to this bill, Saneri is going to be Sanedi. So the bill is actually cancelling the existence of Saneri and it's replacing it by Sanedi. That's what the bill says. Your comment on that?
Okay. I was saying that's called passing the buck. We'll share the buck. It's deep. I suppose he did the presentation. I must take some of the teamwork. In response to the first issue about uninterrupted supply as a primary objective, I think what we're saying is that the energy bill needs to lead with people's well-being and their needs as being the primary determinant of our energy choices, rather than just uninterrupted supply. So we need to say, what are our people's needs? And from that, we work out what are the best energy choices, rather than starting with saying, no matter what energy source it is, we must have uninterrupted supply, full stop, even if it is killing our citizens through carbon emissions or through something else or having detrimental effects. So we say, start with the people and what they need, and then work back to how you should meet that need. And that doesn't in any way exclude the need for energy security. That is a very much a component of what people need is energy security. But the starting point being their needs. And in that way, I think you would give true emphasis to the developmental state that you're talking about, starting with people. I'm not myself going to talk about the modeling stuff because that's not my area of expertise. But I take your point about the bill not going into the specifics, and maybe in that sense we should look at whether it needs to even mention optimization modeling, which is one particular approach. Maybe it can just refer to, you know, a range of the right approaches and leave it with the technical people. In terms of informal settlements, I think that we would certainly not be here saying what we think government should do about informal settlements. It's a complex problem. Obviously, government's intentions are to house people legally and house all people. The reality, however, is that there are informal settlements. And all we're saying in terms of this bill is that the more government knows, has information about informality, where it's happening, what are those people's needs, because those people are generally the very poorest of the poor with no access to resources. So DME does have a policy to try and meet the energy needs of those people, and we're saying the modeling agency needs as much information and data to make sure we are doing that. Okay. And then just very quickly on the cities, I'm not really sure what the members reference around abuse of power, but simply just to say, like the intensive energy users group mentioned, that, you know, 40% of electricity is consumed by those energy intensive users. What we're saying is similarly, cities themselves represent over 40% of electricity consumption, I think over 50% in the country. They are a site of energy management, and there needs to be liaison between the national departments and the cities, even if it's precisely to make sure that everyone's doing what the job that they are scheduled to do. And I think in that regard, it needs to be brought into the bill. I do think that DME and DPLG are working with cities. So it's not that it's not happening, but maybe let's bring it into our modeling specifically. In terms of the capacity building, I'm not completely sure of the member's question, but in relation to this bill, I think we welcome the fact that Sanera Sanedi, well, we're not creating new institutions, we're building on the places where the capacity already exists, and we'd hope to see that similarly with the modelling agency. I think our concern relates to institutions such as the National Energy Efficiency Agency, which has a very important role to play and hasn't really been properly capacitated. I think there's only one or two permanent employees. So we're just saying in this bill, let's make it incumbent on the minister that these institutions need to be robust and well capacitated. In terms of capacity more broadly, as an organization, that is the kind of work we do, so we can talk about that outside of this process. And we're very willing to support any spheres of the country in that.
Anything to add?
You've covered almost all.
Any other questions, members? Follow-up questions?
Yeah, not exactly. You know, I think my colleague, Honorable Tekan, he always asks passionately about the question of when it comes to developing countries, that the issues of the environment is raised. We have developed countries that are always that are industrialized. For instance, in China, some athletes withdrew or some were about to withdraw due to pollution. They had a problem with it. Now he always passionately raises this question that whilst we talk energy, it's like these issues are becoming an impediment when we look at them vis-a-vis the development that we anticipate. How would you, what's your take on such a concern?
I think,
Who wants to ask a question? Honorable Matibela.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, mine is on the informal settlement. I just wanted to know if, when you were looking at the informal settlement, were you also looking at people who are staying where there's a river or where water always stops and people get flooded, to say there's water there, there's danger there, but electricity, the government should bring electricity there. Did you look at that, those things? And when you spoke of the bill is saying no matter how the electricity comes, it should look at the people first. What did you what is your suggestion? what should be put in place there? Because you were talking of carbon and so on.
Okay, you can answer and proceed.
I think those two questions come together quite nicely, so let me know at the end if we have answered them. Obviously, with energy comes, you know, when you use energy in the form of power, whether it's electricity or putting fuel into your car, you often end up with what they call externalities, so impacts outside of what you're doing. And those affect the environment. And it's not just the natural environment. It's also the human environment. So if you've got a paraffin stove in your house, you might get asthma, or you might have fires. So it can also be human impacts, but also broadly on the environment. And it can range from cutting down all of the trees for firewood, or something as global as climate change. And I think nowadays people realize that climate change is a very real and very serious thing, and that even though we might not have been the major cause of it, it's going to affect us in the form of droughts and flooding and not just ourselves, but actually the rest of Africa. And it often affects poor people the worst, because they've got the least resilience, you know, when their crops fail and that kind of thing. So I think there's a realization that we need to take these externalities of energy very, very serious when we make our choices. And when we make our choices, we need to look at something that, can we meet our needs for energy, for heat, for warmth, for mobility, in a form that may not damage ourselves and the environment as much. And obviously, there's also the economics, and you've got to look at what is financially viable. So it's a complex question, and I think that's where the modeling and the modeling agency comes into it. You need to put in all the variables, and what we're saying is that decision makers need to know what those variables are and be well informed in order to make the decisions. You need to be able to look at the finances, you need to look at the economics, you need to look at the job creation, you need to look at the impact on environment. And then be able to take the decision. So we're not saying what decision you must take, but we would like this bill to make sure that when decision makers take those decisions, they have a good set of what are the variables, what are the impacts, and they make it with the primary objective being the well-being of South African people. And I think our concept of the environment very importantly includes the concept of equity. So it's not about keeping a nice pretty park. It's about making sure that everybody has an equal access to those resources out there in the world, and that some people aren't taking at the expense of others. And the more we share the resources equally, the less we impact on our environment. So we don't see them as separate issues. Equity and environment have to come hand in hand. In terms of informal settlements, what we're really looking at there is the fact that very often the poorest of the poorest are not being met with electricity, which is the government's major sort of poverty tool regarding energy, is the rollout of electricity, which, I mean, this country has led with an amazing electrification program. So we're in no way saying it's not a good program. It's been an outstanding program, and we hope that the government will pursue it vigorously. But there will always be people, either because of living in deep rural areas or living in areas that haven't been proclaimed within cities, that fall outside of that. And those people's needs need to be met. And as the member mentioned, those needs might be particular. And the more information we have on who those people are and what are their particular needs, can you meet that need through electricity? Can you meet it maybe through another means? Is it, if they are close to water and electrification, the problem, can we look at other sources of energy? So we really, what we're promoting here in the bill is just making sure that the right information is gathered so that we don't exclude the poorest of the poor from our energy planning critically.
I think that's the bottom line. The government would strive at reaching the poor of the poorest. wherever they are, in cities, in rural areas, everywhere. But the issue is that the conditions should be habitable conditions. You can't say we take electricity to an informal settlement which is not situated at the correct place, especially, you know, the Tuskegee situation in Alexander. You can't say, meanwhile they are there, you should add to the danger and the risk and electrify that area. So that's the bottom line, and it's a principle of government, and we agree with your concerns in making sure that we don't exclude the poor. Member?
Chair, rising from what you've just said, people often talk about the need for information to be taken into account, to measure the variables, where the data is, comparative costs and benefits to the environment and to the people of, for example, solar versus wind versus electrification. But in your knowledge, is that information available anywhere and freely available? I'm aware there is lots of technical expertise out there and people have pockets of research, but is it collated? Is it easily available? Is it accessible to people to be able to make decisions or to evaluate decisions that are made? That's question number one. And question number two, what do organizations or people like yourself do to encourage rural and disadvantaged people to take up alternative energy options, because they often don't want anything other than gas? They call it gas, but they mean electrification, which may not be in their best interest. So what measures do you take to change people's mindsets, to change their habits, to encourage them to use different cooking methods, etc.? Because that's very difficult. One can have very good solutions, but there's a lot of resistance on the ground to taking them up.
Question will go to Honorable Ngobo.
No, it's more of probably a comment than a question, but it is very much to do with the input that the people have made. I think we are well aware that you may be representing they call them sometimes single interest groups. You know, there's nothing wrong with that. We do need single interest groups so that some social interests at a particular path are addressed, and those people vigorously they understand the details of that. That's fine. It's a very welcome exercise, therefore, in a platform like public hearings to bring those interest groups. But you see, the important thing about this bill, which I just wanted to, the important thing about this bill, it's about mastering, planning, and doing things efficiently. And there are three things which actually this bill enhances, which are very important in addressing even all the things that you have said, poverty, environment, and other things. It's human capital, finance capital, and technology. And that is what this bill is going to be modeling, strategizing on very fundamental things of development and of alleviating poverty in a scientific fashion. I think, therefore, your inputs are correct, but also let us not tell them how to do this, because they'll be having experts to do all these things. And they are going to take, in fact, the way probably they are going to do it is going to be far beyond the way we expected it. But there is nothing wrong for us to put those single interest things that they should be. When they do their modeling exercise, they must take into consideration all what you've already mentioned. You are welcome, but at least we must have a focus. This is a very far-fetched bill to really change the way things have been done. That's why the chair was saying this bill is not going to do the things we did them in the past or the present, but we're going to look at what has happened and beam into the future. Do them more correct than we've ever done.
Thank you. Let's have your comment, and then we can wrap it up. Yeah, sometimes if it's a comment, you don't have to to answer, but the honorable member, I was asking some few questions.
I think And I know other people doing inputs today can also certainly respond to that. I think the information to make choices is available, and one would anticipate that a national modelling agency will make that public and that there would be good access to it. Obviously, energy is a rapidly changing landscape, so the information is available, but it's constantly changing and needs updating, but it certainly is around. And then in terms of alternative energy forms, the question referred to sort of in terms of addressing poverty, but in fact, of course, it's an issue addressing also high-end users just as much as low-end users, that high-end users also need to be adaptable to new technologies such as solar water heaters. And, of course, any new technology, people are initially somewhat resistant. The way we do a lot of our work is really trying to mainstream those new approaches, new technologies through sort of government and municipal policies and rollout. So that's how we do it. But we can talk about that again outside of this focus on the energy bill, I think.
Thank you. let me just thank you to say that you have enriched the portfolio committee with your input and presentation and with very brilliant ideas. When we make a determination, I think most of the issues you raised are not controversial. They are part and parcel of our aims and objectives in making sure that we improve as much as possible in that area of energy and electricity. Thank you. Is that the group that the South African Climate Action Network? Is it the one? That your group? Oh, yes. EarthLife. We are now going to have a presentation by EarthLife Africa, Johannesburg. Then we are going to have the ESNO, the National Mine Workers Union. Is it here? Not here. Yeah, because I'm trying to business-like, so as by 12 o'clock I can go home, you know. I wish. So you can proceed. Introduce yourselves, and the procedure is normally presentation for 10 minutes. We ask questions for 10 minutes, and we allow you to respond for 10 minutes.
Thanks very much. Good morning, everyone. My name is Mako Malikalakala, and I'm with my colleague here, Captain Taylor. We are from a Sustainable Energy and Climate Change Project, which is a project of EarthLife Africa. EarthLife Africa is an environmental justice movement. What we do, we capacitate communities, cooperatives, and organized our organizations around issues of energy. We encourage people to participate in processes, policy-making processes, and we also encourage our people to be like agents of change when it comes to environmental issues and to make sure that we protect the environment that we live in. We'd like to take the opportunity given to come and do a verbal submission on the National Energy Bill. We think it came at a time that is very opportune for us. It's very important for the country to have this kind of the Energy Act. But however, we are saying that the Energy Bill, as it is, it contains some serious concerns for us, and it should not be passed in its current form. We, however, acknowledge the objectives of the National Energy Bill, which most of them are very positive, and we believe that they can contribute towards development of our country, towards eradicating poverty in our country, and in such, our comments will be based on that. But however, we have got also a particular concern that the Energy Bill as it is, it should not be a profit-driven, market-driven kind of act if it is ever, the bill is ever being passed. It should be the bill that takes into consideration the material conditions of the people on the ground. We are aware that the process started on Monday. Unfortunately, we were unable to make it. But we are here today where we would like to make an appeal that we state the facts as we had. We understand that some of the issues have dealt them in the past 2 days. But however, we think that maybe we'll complement or bring in a different angle from how other people have presented in the past 2 days. For us, there is a concern that the bill does not adequately focus on the needs of South Africa's poor. The bill does empower the minister to implement programs that may realize some progress in the areas of affordable access, continued electricity, and the safety of electricity substitutes such as coal and paraffin. One thing we are also saying that the bill should recognize that these programs are not mere political policy or politics speak, but reflect entrenched constitutional rights to adequate housing and environmental protection. Furthermore, the bill should recognize shortcomings with regard to the inclusion of externalized costs of alternative sources such as fuel, wood, coal, paraffin. The current policy ignores such costs as the increased air pollution in households and the increased risk of fires and burns. The past presenters were talking about informal settlements as that there is that great risk and those areas maybe should have access to electricity. But for us, we believe that the way the energy bill should shape itself, it should be in a holistic manner, that it should take into consideration all the other elements of development of life in our communities, and in such that if people are living in informal settlements, there are other alternative sources of energy that could be used in exception of electricity, taking into consideration the success and the weaknesses that we have in our own the material conditions on the ground. No matter even how government would like that everybody must have housing, but the need there and the reality there forces people to go out. And we also believe that in the building of houses like RDP houses, people should be given a choice as to what sort of energy do they prefer, rather than just the RDP houses being built and then people are not even asked about the choice that they want to have on the kind of energy that they want to use. They just pumped in with electricity and without even taking into consideration that the people who live in these low-cost houses are very poor people who don't even have employment, but at the end they are also given an extra burden of paying for electricity. We believe that since the bill deals with targeting renewable energy, it should set explicit targets for the percentage of South Africa's energy obtained by renewable sources. The bill should also address the national energy modeling and information agency's ability to include environmental health and safety analysis for the minister to consider for the energy master plan. We believe that the bill should remove all references to market-related compensation of employees of the new agencies and should reconsider the inclusion of electricity and oil industry representatives on the board of the South African Energy Development Institute. The white paper notes that energy services are essential for improving the quality of life through access to services and that modern development is not possible without energy. The 1998 white paper also notes that there is a constitutional responsibility of the state to develop efficient energy sources to cater for the needs of the nation, made available to the people at an affordable cost. And that is why we are much more concerned about market-related pricing, market-related costs. And the white paper also commits the government to optimizing the operations of the energy sector in order to maximize its potential for adequate, reliable, and low-cost electricity to serve the people of South Africa. That we think it's very important, and the bill should be explicit around that. The other thing is that we also have a concern that throughout the remainder of the bill, the objectives of affordability and the protection of the poor take a secondary role. And we believe as a democratic country, as we need to take the majority population into as our priority, you know, priority, whatever we do, and the majority of the people should take precedence in the kind of decisions we make, then we get worried that it's like poor people who are majority in this country, all their issues are being put as on a secondary role. One, why we concerned about that is that for poor people to access affordable electricity, it's very difficult, especially when they don't have money. And we are saying that access to affordable electricity is necessary to realization of the development goals of South Africa and to the elimination or eradication of poverty across the country. Electricity has a wide range of developmental benefits, including increased welfare and decreased health expenditures. If people resort to using coal, paraffin, we know those externalized costs of having houses burned, people having like health conditions due to them being exposed to carbon dioxide or to paraffin fumes. These are not most of the time counted as like the impact of the kind of unclean, unsafe energy that we use. Furthermore, we believe that South Africa, we believe that people have got the constitutional right to live and the constitutional right to live as per Section 24 of the Constitution, that of protection of the environment. And we furthermore understand that the right is supported by international law. And we know to the Convention on Economic, Social and Cultural Rights, and also the Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women. We also know to the Children's Rights Act. We believe that all beneficiaries have the right to housing and should have suitable access to energy, for cooking, heating and lighting. The right to housing is embodied in the Constitution of South Africa, and there is no reason it should not be construed as the ICSR right is construed, since the Constitution notes that when interpreting the Bill of Rights, a court must consider international law. So South Africa has made a progress towards the promotion of international promotion of human rights, and it has ratified a whole host of international conventions which have promoted the democracy in the country and also have promoted the kind of positive development that we have, even if there is still other areas where we are not successful on. My colleague, I think one other thing that we would like to note is that we have additional concerns with the National Energy Bill, especially Section 18.1 D&E, that speaks about the composition of the board, the proposed South African National Energy Development Institute. We believe that this should not include representatives of the electricity industry, the minerals oils industry, and as this would give undue influence to two sections of the economy and society at expense of other sections. For example, the sections on organized labor, citizens, ordinary people or the majority poor people in the country, and the renewable energy industry. So as we have made this submission, we suggest that that provision of the creation of SANEDU be struck off from the draft energy bill. Thank you.
I can see that you have agitated members. They are now, everybody is now raising their hands. So, members, please. The presenters will always be protected by the chair. just want to say before you raise your questions that you raised issues, and when raising issues, you see there is a bill here which is in front of you, and you only at the end raised one part where you feel that the creation of Saveri is not there. So what you are doing is that the focus, even the presenters cabin, should make sure that they concentrate on the bill, because at the same time, you see all the issues you raise here. I don't want to say those are serious political statements. Which political statements have serious implications on, actually it's an indictment on members of parliament, especially if you have to draft a bill which you would relegate the interest of the poor to the back or as secondary. And you don't say, how can politicians not making the interest of the poor, or focus on the interest of the poor as primary? So what what I've observed is that the statement you've read is a very loaded political statement. No, it's not deliberate. It's like taking coal to Newcastle.
Sorry, Chair. We're quite happy to go through the bill. I have a copy of the bill here with me, point by point, and suggest.
No,
we've only been given 10 minutes, so you can't give us hassle for giving a wide overview. But we can rewrite the bill for you if you wish.
What's going to happen now? The members will ask you questions that you can answer. It's not even necessary to go point by point on the bill. Like I was just raising that part where you talk to the chairperson who is a political activist, and then you want to tell him that he's relegating the poor to the back, you see. So the bill itself is actually trying to embrace and encompass everybody, and take fundamentally the interest of the poor to the front. But that will be seen when it's practiced on the ground. So can I give members an opportunity? I didn't want to preempt you, and I didn't want you to concentrate on side issues, because I can see that you agitated. That will be Combrink, that will be Mulefair, that will be, then the chair will be the last. Yeah, it will be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. In that order.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, this bill is mainly there to bring all the energy sectors together. Ne? Now, on your last paragraph, you said, not including of the electricity industry and the mineral oils industry, blah, 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 blah. Now, I can't understand what you tried to say there, because we really try with this bill to bring everyone together. And now, you said in 18.1 B and E, you said excluding them. Now, you can't have an energy bill without the petroleum people and the electricity people. So, I don't understand that one. You say there must be, in this bill, a choice of electricity. Now, honestly, you know that plain electricity, like this electricity, is the cheapest to put into a house. I know there's better options like sun power or solar power, all those other kinds of things. But, and I mean, maybe you must speak to your main group of people coming from some UK or America or somewhere there to help Africa to put these cheaper things into the house. Because honestly, on this stage, we as the government really just try to get electricity in every house. And if you want to put very expensive things into this system, I understand, we must put it in. But it's too expensive. Honestly, it's too expensive now. And we as government must really look after our people, at least that everyone has the option of electricity. You're very confused. You're talking about market-related cost, technology, market this, market that. But when it comes to the salaries of the people who have to work there, you said it can't be market-related salaries. Now, where in this world you want to find people who have to work in this institute without the necessary good salary? Because you know that's a skills problem in this country. You must just explain to me that. It's a scarce skilled country, but all our skills is overseas. It makes the first world rich because they have the money. Now that we want to pay our people also a good salary, a market-related salary, you have a problem with it. Now, give me a solution on this thing. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, the Zali is not a question like you pointed out, that the only at the end that they talked about issues around the people. But I think what you suggested earlier on, that if people could have had the opportunity to look at the department's presentation, because it helps a lot. So that, for instance, on page 6 of their presentation, issues of poverty and affordability, I think they are like newlyweds in this bill. They are a couple. The department emphasizes, because it says here, to ensure that the diverse energy resources are available in sustainable quantities and at affordable prices to the South African economy in support of economic growth and poverty alleviation. I'm just quoting this to perhaps re-emphasize what you are saying, that some of the issues that we know it's unfortunate that we are not here, like since Monday, but I'm saying the issues of poverty and accessibility, I think the bill to some extent speaks to that. Not unless if you wanted it to be phrased in a totally different way from what the department, from the department's view. Thanks, Chair.
Mama.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, mine is also on the poorest of the poor of the poorest. I just want to know, perhaps you make even a suggestion how to deal with poor people who can't afford. Because when this government took over in 1994, was that it was looking at the most disadvantaged people. And I don't know if there is something that's cheaper than electricity to use in a house. The other things have been taken, because really electricity is the cheapest of them all. I just want to concur myself with the honorable member here, who was saying that perhaps there's somebody there who knows and who can send us cheaper things to serve our people, because this government and this bill is really stressing about poor people, poverty. So I don't know which bill did you read which does not talk to the poor and talk to poverty. Thank you, Jefferson.
Can we have now...
Listen, you have a problem with my name, Dr. Rabinovitz. So if you want to just call me Dr. Ruth, because that's...
Oh, Ruth. Dr. Ruth. That's better. That's better. Okay. Dr. Ruth.
Dr. Ruth. Okay. Chairperson, to the presenters, I just would like to say I have sympathy with your viewpoint, because we all want to support the poor and we all come from strength in different areas. I happen to be very sympathetic to the promotion of the renewable energy model, which battles when it comes to financial issues. One hears all the time that electricity is cheaper. And in response to what Honorable Malesi said, yes, it's fine if the bill states in principle that we want to support the environment and make the model sustainable and environmentally friendly and cost-effective. But unless we have actual frameworks in the bill that ensure that we do this in the right way, it doesn't matter how many words of good intention we have in the bill. And this is where one can ask you guys if you will come back to us. Can you actually tackle the bill clause by clause, and where you see ways of introducing a strengthening of the alternative energy without adding terribly to the burden of cost? Can you give us those suggestions? Because they will be put in as possible amendments by various members of all the parties, or at least they will be discussed. We don't have perhaps the expertise or the time to do that. For example, you said get rid of Sanedi, but then where else will you see the interest of renewable energy promoted? By what body? Sanedi does work now, but who says that Sanedi's work is taken up? That's my one question. The other, you said that targets should be put into the bill, but targets are adjusted regularly. For example, and I'd love the DG if he's allowed to respond, there was a target of 4% of renewable energies by 2010. It's been adjusted down, ironically, in spite of the climate mitigation policy being adopted, because of various factors. So you've got to require that targets are put in or stated regularly or readjusted regularly and made publicly knowable, but you can't actually state what the target is. And then is there anywhere in the bill that mandates building codes for energy-friendly structures that don't actually cost any money, but just the way that you insulate them, the way you direct them, the way you position them, is that not something that we need to include in the bill? And I've got lots of other questions like that, but I'm trying to just select the essentials. Thank you.
Before the chairperson comes in, the issue on clause by clause, when you want 10 minutes, you can't present it, but we emphasized that you should make written the reason. Yeah. So there's no problem. If members have the written input, then they can respond to it, because the problem is that if you give people 45 minutes, it's not possible to, like, cover all of them. But they can concentrate on the major aspects of the bill, because they only raised an issue around Sanedi that it should be struck off. So we were responding to that. But if there are other issues which they feel that it's important for the bill to consider, they can raise them. It's not a problem. But I was trying to adjust. I don't want somebody to disturb me in my... the issues of time are very important, because sometimes each presentation made, we are repeating what the other groups have said. And we do have the benefit of the state law advisors who are actually assisting us in the aspects of drafting. Because, you see, most of the people can say this should be replaced by that. Only to find that they don't have the actual expertise of wedding and drafting. But the state law advisors can say, if you want to say the minister must, some people prefer that it should not be must, it should be may. But the legal people have that competency and they can deal with it. So can we have the chairperson? We'll make a follow-up after this. Answered, but again, we have the chairperson asking a question.
Thank you, Chair. You were here, and I'm sure you remember when you came here, you also highlighted that. I said it's a problem for us when you have not been here, because then we have to take us back. Now, I just want to mention most of the things that you have said, how they were dealt with quickly. See? The paraffin and issues of banning, they were dealt with very thoroughly yesterday with the paraffin people who were here. The holistic and integrated approach in energy security was also dealt with very thoroughly with all the stakeholders. The question of energy efficient housing was dealt with also here. The question of renewables in under SANEDI and why SANEDI should be moved to SANEDI and where SANEDI, SANERI and NIMIA will feature, it was dealt with yesterday. The question of market-related remuneration, as we have picked up, was dealt with. Versus public service salaries, it was dealt with. The question of electricity versus paraffin, where South Africa is taking the poor people, is it taking the people back to paraffin or towards electricity, it was dealt with. You know, we dealt with all these issues, you see, which now we have to repeat now because we were not in these sessions, at least to be observers, even though we're not presenting. Now, the question of board composition was also dealt with. It was dealt with so thoroughly that we even came to a point where we said, because of the strategic centrality of the coal industry in energy security, probably the Chamber of Mines should be, delegate one member representing the mines, but particularly that person must maybe particularly come from the coal industry because of the strategic importance. So we dealt with these matters. There are a lot of them. But again, that does not exclude that. Therefore, because we dealt with them, therefore all groups who are here are not supposed to voice their interest. In reality, all of what you have is also covered, I'm sure, in your presentation submissions, which then all the parliament, together with the department, can look into. But there is nothing wrong also when you raise them. But you see, there is only a problem when you come and raise these issues in a militant way because they represent your emotions. It's true, it's fine. They represent our emotions. We like that as public representatives. But we have an advantage as public representatives ourselves to sit in the center, just like this energy bill that we're passing, where everything passed through us. And you come with a single interest group, emotions, we are able to handle them because we know what other single interest group emotions are. And we're at the center of that. All that we are appealing is that in future, because we're still having going to be holding this public hearing, in future, please, people must attend when they start this public hearing so that when their time of presentation comes, we do not have to cover things that are already covered, or you have members of parliament starting to point at you and that you are in a platform of fighting. But in reality, the issues, all of them inside that you have raised, they have been covered, and this committee represents exactly that. We are very happy that you have raised them, but you have covered them even far beyond your level. Poverty, we are about that. SANEDI and renewables, we are about that. We brainstormed it yesterday. So I think, therefore, we must try and be calm and read these documents. In fact, if you read here, this one is about interface with other legislation. Energy bill interfaces with a number of pieces of legislation. So anybody is going to say that, but this bill is red, but it undermines because there is an egg like this. It does. It has considered all related legislation. Here, this bill has also considered all related things that they've talked about energy issues, not even climate change, about foreign policy, everything. So I think we have to be really waste time for. We must just allow the members who are presenting, but then we as members of parliament, because we know what we have covered, I think we mustn't engage with them and keep on interchanging. I think the chair must just tell them that these matters have been covered, but all your points are also going to be taken into consideration. Thank you, chair.
No, that's fine. Can you close your mic? I was just saying that I was trying to protect them because I could see
I don't think you have to protect us. We can respond, and I think we are the right platform to respond.
Relax. Don't be agitated yourself. Relax. Because it comes with a fighting mood. You see, there is this thing called revolution. We know about revolution, and we know about the interest of the masses. Why keep it? You see, we know about paraffin. You grew up in those conditions. So you must relax. You see, you must understand that we're dealing with a national energy bill. And it's very important to deal with it. You see? Because, you see, the choice on electricity, it's said by members. Their choice is government policy. Government, when as soon as it says this is a township, it's low-cost housing, it makes a provision for electricity. So there's no way you can say you should consult people whether they want it or they don't want it. If the choice they have is that after having it, the best thing they can do is not to use electricity. So that would be the best. But government cannot say we are going to have a multiplicity of choices for people living in low-cost houses. Because you budget for, maybe we put 280, well, how much is it now which we put? It's about above 20 grand for that. When we started, it was 15,000. So what we say now is that the government has a policy called Batupili. And Batupili means the people first. The approaches of government has this thing called bottom-up approaches. It's bottom-up. So what you do is that when you plan, you integrate a lot of things in your planning. When you model, you integrate a lot of things in modeling. So what we are saying is that we'll give you a chance to respond, but I raised this issue as if it's a joke. Don't take coal to Newcastle, because Opam Nareng is an activist. So you can respond.
Thank you. I'll respond to some of the concerns or some of the comments or questions made, and my colleague will answer to some. But I would like to, like, take offense, you know, as a citizen of this country, that if I come to this kind of place, I need to be given due respect like any other person. I'm not privileged to have the kind of information that you have on an everyday basis like you have. And if we would be able to access the kind of information that is given to us, you know, at that kind of speed, it would be of an advantage. We wouldn't come and, as you say militant, raise issues in a militant manner. Because if I had information, and besides that information, if I could see the reality of what is put in the acts, what is put in the bills, being practically implemented on the ground, then I would be a different person and come into this room with a different view. And I came in openly as a citizen to make a presentation on behalf of other people, and I don't feel happy with the kind of thing, like we started the process, like by Monday, already some of these issues had already been, you know, kind of discussed and they've been covered. Because if you had clear procedures on what has got to happen when people come for this kind of meeting submissions, that would not have happened. But because there was no clear explanation, so that means that information part, it's lacking, it needs to be improved or at least be given, you know, in a particular different manner. Electricity may be the cheapest of all energy sources, but how is that electricity generated? Is it generated through coal? Is it generated through nuclear? How is it generated if you say it's very cheap? And what are the costs, the external costs of that electricity that we're having? And we know as citizens of this country, the Bill of Rights, you know, guarantees our rights. And it is through that we believe that each and every act and whatever policy that is being composed and whatever is being implemented would be for the benefit of the majority of the people in this country. At present, we've got more than 45% unemployment in this country. And what does that tell us? Simply tells us that a lot of our people live in deprivation. They don't have, they don't eat well. They can't access a whole host of things because of affordability. So that is just my comment. Thank you.
Thank you to my comrade and all protocol reserved as I address the members of this committee. I'd like to start by going through the questions, but before I do, I want to make one meta point regarding this bill, and it is a point which I think the bill has to be redrafted on in its entirety. There seems to be no particular reason, and I have been to DME presentations at DME itself on this matter, why we actually need to have these agencies in the first place. This seems to be the almost outsourcing of what should be government functions. The modeling of energy and integrated energy planning is obviously a function which belongs within the Department of Mineral and Energy. It does not need a separate agency to be done, such as NEMA. And furthermore, the bill gives the power to the minister to make sweeping changes in regards to agencies. If I may draw the honourable member's attention, and since we are going to go into specifics, is to Section 6, Clause 1, Subclause B. It says that the minister may establish agencies or entities that are outside of what is considered in this bill. We are giving a blank check to the Minister of Minerals and Energy to create entities according to the wording in this bill. There are specific instances, which some of which we've highlighted in our written submissions, others which I would gladly go with you through, that this bill is falling down. I mean, for example, they wish to have strategic stockpiles. With oil at $125 to $135 a barrel, who is going to pay for 2 days' worth of petroleum stockpiles? And it is up to Parliament to actually consider these kind of implications from this bill. Because if it is the state that pays, that means that I pay. And it's a fortune. They'll make the arms deal seem like a drop in the ocean. So we have specific meta problems with this bill. And I think this bill needs to be redrafted, in particular to the privatization of DME functions. And that will come back to the question for market-related salaries. So to go through the individual members' questions very quickly, to talk about the minerals and oil sectors on the board, we don't think that any particular sector in society should be given a board position, because a board position is a voting position. They can actually determine policy. So there's a distinct conflict of interest. It may be that you may have an energy modeling which says that we may need to phase out coal, which incidentally is government policy through the recently adopted LTMS. So if the oil and the coal industries, in particular the chamber of mines, are single interest groups, have voting powers within these agencies, that is a distinct conflict of interest and is against the fundamentals of democracy. They may be able to input to the process, and we'd hope that these agencies, if they were to be created, would allow them to make input, but to have voting powers is a story which we find to be very worrying indeed. Then the question came to electricity being the cheapest. And the contention there is that renewable energy versus fossil fuel energy is far more expensive. Now, I have brought with me today, because I realize this might come up, a short study on this very topic, and I'm going to invite the honorable members to take it and read it with them. But I'd just like to make a few points. We expect within the next 5 to 10 years, renewable energy will be cheaper on pure market terms, including capitalized costs, than your fossil fuel energies. So if you're an economist right now, you should be looking at solar power because it's going to save you money. This bill is all about providing affordable energy, which is why we get back to putting specific targets in this bill. So renewable energy is going to be cheaper within the next 5 to 10 years. Furthermore, if we do as the white paper, 1990 white paper, says we must do, and which DME has failed to done so far through delaying the commissioning of a study on externalized costs, we'd find that it's already cheaper. Externalized costs account for probably double the price of your current electricity costs. I witnessed a presentation at NERSA by a local councillor from Witbank, and he said, you know what? Eskom should give us electricity for free because of all the coal trucks and air pollution that we endure on a daily basis. These externalized costs are important. They need to be in this bill, and they need to be explicitly mentioned in the bill. We have seen that in the white paper, they have been ignored. Government came up with a policy, it was ignored. It's now time for Parliament to legislate those bits of policy so they cannot be ignored. It becomes law of the land and not mere government policy. To the issue of market-related costs, we believe that's something that shouldn't be legislated. There's a difference between paying a market-related cost and legislating a market-related cost. Ideally, what you pay people within a government department is a function of government policy. Why should we have to legislate what government decides to pay people? There is labor law, and that should be the applicable labor law. We don't legislate to a company what it should pay people above a minimum wage. Why should we be doing that to government? So we suggest that all market-related salaries be taken out. The more cynical would say that the establishment of these agencies and market-related, and I'm not saying this, but I say cynical people may say this, that the establishment of these agencies for market-related salaries is a parachute, a golden parachute for certain members in government to jump into when regime change happens come next elections. That is a perception. I don't think it's true. But these are things that we must actually really consider and take into account. Regarding the DAR department's presentation, to bring you back on this point, we were the only time we've actually had public participation on this version of the bill. There's been several versions, which have all radically altered. But on this version, this is when DME invited us up to have a presentation. We went through a PowerPoint presentation, remarkably similar to the one that I see waved around earlier. And then we asked for a copy of the draft bill so we could sit down and make the kind of detailed comments which I think Parliament would like to see, individual word-by-word comments with facts, analyzed, case study, etc. We were told we couldn't have it until it was gazetted, and then we were given a mere 3 weeks to analyze this bill and come to Parliament to make submissions. I mean, we are representatives of community-based organizations, so we had to have 3 weeks of consultation with various community stakeholders and write a submission and come down to Parliament. So that process is quite clear. So I'm not very impressed with DME's presentation. The suggestion here is that, you know, the bill, how do we deal with poor people who can't afford electricity? Well, the government already has policy on that. It's called free basic electricity. Furthermore, we have, within the Constitution, if at the very least an implied, but if not an explicit right, through the right to housing, for the right to electricity, what we are asking Parliament to do is to specifically insert within this bill clauses regarding that master energy planning, integrated energy planning, agencies, ministers' programs, which, again, is an open-ended question, these must take into account, first, the constitutional right to universal access of electricity. Secondly, the right to a clean environment. So these things must be taken into account in the planning. Because without these things taken into account, we have a skewed planning. And it is the same point, again, around externalized costs. We have issues around frameworks and intentions and that were brought up. I'd just like to point out, one of the ways we're trying to address this issue through our presentation here today is to put a specific goal of renewable energy, which we know will be cheaper, which is cleaner, which will help us meet our international obligations, to this bill. We've suggested 15% by 2020. That is a goal. So it is very clear what DME, what these various agencies should all be working towards. Because right now it says the minister may set a target. And what does that mean? That means the minister may set any target. It means it may set 1%, it may set 2%, it may include biomass in that target, so everybody who burns firewood is using renewable energy. So it is very important to specifically mention this point. And I hope that will answer your question about frameworks. And again, I shall pass around these. This is a 30-page document which will go through details on financing and will also go through how we actually get to this, which energy sources would we use. So what I'm trying to do with this particular document is to not come to you to say we have some funny, honey-bugging, liberal, bleeding-heart critique and we would like nice, clean power. It's actually economic fact. It is the social reality which we live in. And we are worried that unless it is actually put in this National Energy Bill, we will continue upon a deluded path of a fossil fuel economy. We are entering into a stage where we've seen never before scarcity within the fossil fuel economy. You cannot even buy zinc on the futures market at the moment because it is so short in supply. And we've seen this with oil price, we've seen it with coal price. We are trying to say in a National Energy Bill, which has an event horizon of 25 years, through the planning process, that it should take these things into account, that Parliament should take these things into account, and specifically legislate how this National Energy Bill is going to actually ensure all of these great things. If the oil price goes to $200 a barrel, which is likely, it'll drag the coal, natural gas, and other paraffin and other supplies with it. You will not be able to afford to provide electricity to people, even though that is the constitutionally mandated position of this country. It is the ultimate law of our land, is the Constitution. I don't have to give a lecture on that. So it is imperative that these things get into the bill. We are very worried about this bill. I cannot stress the importance that there is a lot of detailed wording in this bill. And as the Rabinowitz, am I correct? Yes. As Dr. Rabinowitz stated, we are more than welcome to come back down. We are from Johannesburg, by the way. We've come all the way from Johannesburg to make public presentation here. We haven't been sitting around in Cape Town and having time to actually come on other days, and so we appreciate that you will see us today. That we will come back down to Cape Town. We will go through the financing of renewable energy. We will bring all the documentation. We'll bring through the legal documentation if you want. And just lastly, I mean, we don't really consider ourselves to be a single issue group. And if anything, is energy is a multi-pronged issue. Our arguments and our perspective is from a pro-poor, pro-environment perspective, which pretty much encompasses all of society and all sectors of society. I think those are my main points, and I hope I've done the members' questions justice. Thank you.
Yeah, we will ask the secretaries to our support staff just to distribute the documents to members. Then we will go through them. But what I wanted to say is that if anybody taking offense to what members said, let's as a chairperson, let me apologize for that. So as this issue should be put aside and we should concentrate on the issues which has a bearing on the baseline energy bill. Chairperson?
No, Chairperson.
And from that, yourself.
Chairperson, there are some procedures in Parliament which we follow. And you see, once we started to erode those procedures because we want to please members of the public who have not followed those procedures, I think we'll be taking it down this little road. You see, public hearings, before they are held, they are by procedures of Parliament and law, they have to be advertised in all possible media of communication for a month. So these public hearings, they started on 2029. They were advertised as early as the weekend of the 27th of June. And everybody who is part of them, it's because he saw them in those. Well, we didn't phone anybody to come in. So if a person did not come on the 29th, where these documents were distributed, everybody was there got this document. So it can't be the error of law of government or of parliament. It should be an error of a person who did not come when he knew that the date of public hearing started on the 29th. So parliament or anybody else can't be accused of that. So I think we must correct those problems. So there's no problem of communication. We did exactly what communication is required according to law and procedures of Parliament. Second, the Bill of Rights, or some of the members talked about Bill of Rights here, that they have a Bill of Rights as citizens of this country. But you see, Bill of Rights do not override procedures. There are procedures, and indeed everybody has a right, has a Bill of Rights, but there are procedures that have to be followed. And those procedures should be within the constitutional mandate of how the state should function. And so I do not want people, you see, once you come with an attitude and perception to Parliament that anyway they have picked up something here, that he said that there was a time when they were given only 8 days to look at the bill. So already as they came having developed perceptions that this is a Parliament which does not listen to people, but we are going to forcefully put our position. We defend the poor. They sit there. They have votes. You see, we don't have to start like that. In Parliament, we must follow procedures. And indeed, if I say single group interest, environment is a single group interest, although it covers a lot of things just like energy, but it's an interest that many members of environment, they look at issues but in the interest of the safety of environment. And there's nothing wrong with that. Parliament, as public representatives, we've got to accept that. We've got to, but we do not want that when people come to Parliament, they come already with perceived conceptions that we are not going to listen to them. That About the renewables, as I said, we discussed this question of renewables. In fact, as I said just now, there are three pillars of economic development, and they are scientifically founded and researched. Human capital, you have to have human capital, you have to have finance capital, you have to have technology. Now, if you have those three pillars, now, technology so far in this world, so you can trace all records of development of the well-developed nations, Japan, US, Sweden, Israel. The highest parameter in the other three is technology. With the development of technology, is development of economy. And now, if you are saying we must just focus on renewable energy, these are matters that were debated yesterday. Renewable energy is the most useful thing that ever all of us want. In fact, we as government of the ANC, we want to even join the energy, the International Energy Renewable Energy Council. But you see, it's one thing to have a desire, and it's another to have the reality which is supposed to serve the nation as the baseline energy to make you live and me and you live. Now, in this energy planning that we have taken renewable energy as central to our development of energy strategies. But there are technologies. In fact, people have been saying, that's what we discussed today, people have been saying that before, they've been saying that radioactive, nuclear radioactive materials, these long-term waste, they are hazardous, and but there are technologies these days that are trying to reinvent those radioactive substances to be non-radioactive, what they call transmutation reactions. And there are also many techniques that are being developed, especially like by Mobil, which are about even making this carbon problem in the fossil fuels to be a thing of the past. So technology is developing. In fact, yesterday we argued with some renewable people that in 100 years, you're saying that renewable will be leading the world. We say, no, say it may, because you do not know the development of technology over these 100 years, how they will develop and what will happen. And today, I was talking to one of the journalists here. I've been to England in Manchester, in Birmingham, where there is a nuclear reactor that was decommissioned, which is now totally free of anything. There's no radioactivity. You go there. It was a nuclear plant that was decommissioned. I've been there. I stayed 5 years in England. So the technology is developed. And we can't lock ourselves. And this energy bill, we did stress yesterday that this energy bill should not lock itself that in the 25 years, only things that are in this bill should be done. It should be a versatile bill, a dynamic bill, which is able to respond to the demands of the time without locking itself within a period of 25 years specific. But that 25 years, as they think, there's nothing wrong about planning this. I have a 25-year plan to do this. But that 25-year plan should be very pragmatic and versatile and free. That's what we're saying. That's how we have to conduct our business.
Womlo. Your chairperson. My name is Sam Long. Thank you, Chairperson. The Chairperson of the committee, COVID Novo, in fact, addressed the issue of communication thoroughly. It's always a burning issue when people want to claim that they've not been informed. So he has addressed that. So I thought that I'm not going to deal on that. Also, what you just mentioned when you round off, the very same committee in 1997 went to Birmingham to that nuclear plant. The very same committee. So we are far in advance. Chairperson, but I think the issue of that Section 6 We will, during our deliberations, we will look at it and see our best. What input did we get from all the stakeholders? But what is, in fact, disturbing me, Chairperson, the gentleman mentioned something, and he used the word of parachuting. I would like him to please explain thoroughly, because he added it could be the reason for some members who were to leave Parliament or election hearing, all that kind of things. What does he meant for that? If you can just, in fact, I wanted to call him to order, but I left there and I have just left him to continue. But if you can just explain to me, what does he meant of that parachuting during his delivery, during his input? I thank you, Chairman.
Yeah. There are issues I was raising. So the first point I raised around apology. When there is the tensions are high, you must know how to manage tensions. So you don't have to say, hey man, you know, because you'll end up now, you see, we are going to end up entering into a physical street fight. And that's not how Parliament operates. And we know that presentations are influenced by situations and circumstances. So I'm sure that you'll not have every presenter coming here being an understanding person, knowing exactly parliamentary procedures. You won't have that. You'll have, because obviously perceptions out there are built, comrades. And every time the society, because we are in parliament, it's like a high and mighty structure. So there are views expressed down there. We suggest that members of parliament have no experience whatsoever with informal settlement, with paraffin, with ordinary things. And our dispensation is telling you we are 14 years in power. So most of us come from those conditions. And some of the issues which are raised are issues which it's very unfortunate that we don't have the luxury of time here. We can, in a very sober and open-ended manner, engage. And I want to say, as a person, I'll be prepared to engage with all the issues raised by both presenters, even outside, even in my office, because those are issues which, you see, when we fight with a lot of groupings at the ANC, the ANC, we do have the Soweto Electricity Crisis Committee. We do have the IAPF and everything. And people feel that the government is not doing enough to represent their interests and aspirations. And we should fairly, it's a fair way of saying, obviously we don't expect people to say that because we come from the ANC or from the mass movement, in 14 years we cannot forget. So people do have the thinking that we've forgotten about the masses on the ground. So I'm just saying, we apologize because there was a communication breakdown. Even if, what's your name, Chief?
Tristan Taylor, sir.
Tristan Taylor was saying that he doesn't appreciate the presentation by a DME. It means Christian has gone through the presentation. You get my point? And it goes without saying that both of the presenters have gone through the presentation and they don't appreciate it. And they've gone through the brief and they feel that the bill should be written. Okay? So we want to apologize on things we have done wrong, but we don't have to be told by the same people who say they've got no information that they've gone through the presentation, they've gone through the bill, and they do have information. So the issue is that in a vigorous way, their views have to be presented, and we don't discount that, and we don't disagree that people should present in a vigorous way, but we cannot be blaming each other and pointing fingers at each other as if we will not drink tea with each other when we see each other tomorrow. That's the point. Honorable Smith, before you answer, another member wants to ask a question. Then I can give you a chance.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I thought I was coming to Minos Energy Committee. Now I'm getting a political lesson, yeah? Mr. Chair, I don't know what happened, but I only have, you know, there's two issues I'd like to raise. One is I do get the impression that some of the presenters are putting the factual position we have now and then trying to make the bill stick, not stick, but refer to the present position. And I think that's one of the questions I'm going to ask Mr. Gumede when I refer back to the committee, and that is, the bill seems to be setting an overarching act or bill without reference to the current structure, because that's what they're aiming at. And then it should filter down in terms of the bill once it has been accepted. In other words, you don't draft the bill with reference to the current structure. You put the overarching scenario there, and then you adapt the structures to it. That seems to be the process. And I will ask Mr. Gumede when his time comes whether that's the correct procedure, because there's references. They are quite clearly not referenced to certain existing entities have not been made. And the purpose we'll find out from Mr. Gumede. But the other point I'd like to make is shortly on the renewable energy. We've had the discussion, and, you know, my concern, we're all in favor of renewable energy. Policies indicate that. Policies of political parties indicate that. But I do find, and the impression I get, and maybe that economical study of yours would help, economics, and that I have not seen the renewable energy field, and I'm not giving it a criticism, I'm trying to state it as objectively as possible, come to the party, so-called, when with a big crisis. You know, we have co-generation tenders being put out or requests by ESCOM, and the sum total was about 5,000 megawatt, which is very small in comparison. So although the theory, the principle, the willingness is there, I do not see, at this point in time, from my small vantage point, whether renewable energy at this point in time at least can fulfill the shoes of coal-fired power stations and even worse, than nuclear power stations. So maybe my perception is wrong, but that's the perception I've had, which I've discussed with a few people, that if there was that ability, it would have manifested itself by now, especially in the light of the opportunity gained by the recent crisis.
May I give you an opportunity? I think I've got about 4 minutes left. In actual fact, that our time is long exhausted because it's 1 hour, 5 minutes already. So you can answer the questions, then you can go for tea in the next few minutes. Thanks.
Good. Thank you. Realizing time, I'll try and be brief. The story about parachuting, I was merely explaining a perception that I've heard repeated elsewhere. I don't believe it personally, but I would think that Parliament would be welcome to hear what kind of perceptions are being created by this. And it would help in the minister's deliberations. So there's a difference between perception and reality. I don't believe the perception, but I'm merely stating that it is a perception which is out there. Okay. So regarding the overarching scenario and the process of the bill, a lot of our detailed comments, especially our freedom of access comments, which is a significant part of this bill, you know, the modeling agency is supposed to get information from various different users. All that information, a lot of it will be considered commercial and then won't be released under PIA regulation. ESCOM's forward pricing curve, which they've refused to release to us and to others, you can't have energy modeling in this country without ESCOM's forward pricing. So we believe that even with this overarching process and these very noble objectives, the details of this bill will not meet those objectives. So our criticism is essentially not with the objectives. You want to do energy planning, you want to do integrated energy planning, you want to promote all these things, great, go for it. But this details and the way it's worded in the bill is inappropriate and it won't make it. So we'll be passing, in our view, a bill which is destined to fail on the implementation. And then, yes, the masses will not see implementation. And it will be as if, I'm saying as if, the government does not care about the masses, because shoddy legislation will lead to lack of implementation. And then on the renewable energy potential, the renewable energy sector at the moment is very small, so it can't make huge contributions now. And I think that no enlightened person within the renewable sector would say that it would be the end of coal. In this paper, which I have here, which is for that, and it is a very technical paper, and I'm producing a more non-technical version at the moment. So how we start in this year, what we do this year, what we do the next year, what we do the next year, what are the different types that we do, so that by 2020 we'll be looking at 15% of total energy generation. By 2050, we'll be looking at 50%. So there is a plan that's formulated. The problem is that we're not seeing DME and ESCOM integrate with that plan, or, you know, debate it, put it into board. And that's one of, I think, the roles of Parliament, is to specifically express in a bill that, you know what, we want you to do X, and you're going to have to do it because it's law. And that's our point behind the renewable things, is that Parliament needs to say, you must do X, because if you're going to leave it to ESCOM, and with all due respect to DME, you know, in their current way of doing it, I don't think we're going to see renewable energy. That's just been our experience. So it is essentially about legislating so that it does happen. You know, ESCOM knows coal. It knows coal very well. It does wondrous things with coal. Nobody makes electricity cheaper than ESCOM does, and it knows very little about nuclear electricity. It doesn't know anything about renewables. ESCOM itself just doesn't know. They're in the beginning phases of that. And I think it's part of Parliament's responsibility to the citizens to achieve long-term affordable electricity and for a clean environment to help ESCOM a little bit along that path. And it can do that through the legislation. So that's one of the opportunities which this National Energy Bill. But, I mean, fundamentally, and this probably as a concluding comment, this bill does need to be redrafted. I do not think this bill should go through in its present format. If it goes through in its present format, you will have a bill which is destined not to achieve the objectives, because it will be implemented. Implementation is not within the drafting of this bill. So that is our fundamental objection. It's not to the objectives and not to modeling to agency, but it is that the bill is a fundamentally flawed piece of proposed legislation. Okay, thank you very much. Comrade, do you have any concluding remarks, since I've spieled along for a while?
I think the conclusion remarks would be that I think there is no better time than the present moment for the Parliament to create enabling legislation towards energy efficiency in the country.
What do you want to say?
It's very important to have things put closed correctly before we, because otherwise we'll leave pumping stones under us. I think the member here is correct what he's saying. Again, it's just a matter of procedure. That is why public hearings are exactly for that. If you have raised concern, this is an initial draft. In the final draft, all concerns that have been put forward, they will be put here, and the Parliament will then come to Parliament and show us how these important considerations and input which have been made. But we don't invite people just to talk and go. What we have raised is what will be looked into as an overall thing from every other stakeholder and be considered into this bill. Then the final draft will then come back to Parliament and we'll sit with them and see if some of the important inputs have been taken into consideration. I think that's a procedure. That's why this is the first draft.
The real chairperson has said what I wanted to say. because I was just saying that obviously these are public hearings. Parliament has not made its own input or determination on all input. So it means because that's not it will not be our intention to introduce a bill which is bound to fail. We don't want that type of a bill. We want a bill which should succeed. We should lay a precedent for many more years to come, such that if there are flaws in the process, we can amend, we can shape it, polish it, and make sure that it works for the masses and it works for the people of South Africa. With those few words, I just want to thank you for the robust. We do allow robustness in Parliament. We do ourselves as parties get into a robust engagement. So it's important to have those sentiments expressed in a robust way. And I now want to invite you for 10 minutes tea, so as you can cool down. Some don't drink water. No problem, we can talk. In future, we can talk. Thank you very much. No, they are not going to take long. COSATU knows what the revolution is, and they know what that the intentions of governments are, so there's no problem. Before I give Loom to start, the National Union of Mine Workers to start, I just want to raise that there was a technical error, especially when we were dealing with the last group presenting here. The other stakeholders came to me to repeat just to inform me that when the department was making a presentation, it was not a public hearing. So what it means is that the presentation was made in the absence of stakeholders. It was not a public hearing. It was made for members of the portfolio committee. It was a briefing. So the chairperson was saying here, and the former whip about the formal procedures of parliament, those notifications did not invite stakeholders to that meeting. That is why many or most of the stakeholders did not have the benefit of the department's presentation. So we are simply correcting that mistake and once more apologizing. People say I like apologizing as if I am a priest. Well, I'm a member of the ANC. I must except if I'm wrong. So we're just correcting that part. And the department has said that there are copies at the back of their presentation. You can get the copies at the back of their presentation. And if there are no sufficient copies, we will ask our secretary to communicate with stakeholders to make sure that they do have copies. That was a point I wanted to straighten up before we start. And now we can give an opportunity to COSATU. COSATU is represented here by the National Union of Mine Workers. I'll ask COSATU to the head of delegation to introduce his delegation. Because in their mind, from the look of things, there are no women. There are no women, is it?
Yeah, thank you, the chairperson. Indeed, some of us are honorary women today. Yeah, let me introduce the team that we have here. We do have COSATU here as well as the NUM, and the submission is a joint submission that we are making to you. We have on my far left Comrade Mfana Futhi, who is the researcher at COSATU. And we have Comrade Fred Corner, our head of department in the parliamentary office. And then we have Comrade Sibo Sisumini, who is our researcher. And myself, I'm the treasurer for NUM, Derek Elbrecht. Jefferson, we do have the presentation and we have circulated copies of it. The intention is not to read through everything, but to highlight some key areas that we have identified needs your attention. And then in terms of just the process of presenting this paper, I'm going to introduce the document and then as part of the substantive issues, I'm going to hand over to Comrade Fred, who will deal in more detail with some of the areas in the document as from point item 4 of the document on page 4. But let me just start off by saying, Chairperson, that we took note of the fact that there was an attempt to draft this bill in 2003, and that was basically to address some of the outstanding commitments that emanated from the 1998 white paper. We were under the impression that that in these outstanding issues would have been introduced in Parliament in 2006, and we were informed that it was then withdrawn through pressure because some of the critical issues affecting energy security was not properly dealt with. In 2008, the bill was tabled at NEDLAC shortly before it was introduced in Parliament. We raised serious concerns as COSATU and NUM in particular about the lack of consultation with the various stakeholders in the sector. And therefore, we wanted to allow for a proper NEDLAC engagement. And in fact, as we are talking here today, there is a meeting of NEDLAC that are discussing this very same issue today. So we're hoping that provision will be made to absorb some of the outcomes of that process also in the bill as it is before you. And therefore we appeal to you as our lawmakers to take the issues that we're highlighting to yourselves as serious, as we do experience the effects of some of our legislative processes amongst our constituencies, our members, our communities, and so forth. Jefferson, on the there is a perceived, I want to put it that, a perceived energy crisis. And it became more, or it was emphasized more after the famous Cape Town Bolt incident, the Kubrick Bolt incident, where Cape Town had the first taste of the rolling blackouts that we experienced. There are a lot of negative consequences of the Bolt incident, but it also brought out quite a number of positive effects of that bulk incident, but it also indicated the vulnerability of having a very disintegrated energy sector in the country, and therefore the inputs that we are putting here should be seen in the context of that total overview of the complete energy industry or sector in the country. So on December 25, 2005, the Kubrick Nuclear Power Station Unit 1 tripped. That caused severe damages in the generator and damaging both the rotor and the stator. We almost had a similar incident now when Unit 1 again was had to shut down last week, and we almost had a repeat of what happened in 2005. We are saying, Jefferson, that it's a perceived energy crisis. The question that we have consistently tried to answer to ourselves, and we seem not to be able to find answers, is what has changed since January 2008? What has really changed to prevent blackouts, especially in the months where, in terms of the electricity usage trends in the country, these are your highest consumption periods and the peak periods. But we have not experienced the kind of blackouts that we had over the summer months. What really has changed? Right? And I think these questions need to be interrogated very properly. And that's why we talk about a perceived crisis. And we don't want to say it's not a real crisis, it's a perceived crisis, because neither did we use more from January up to now, neither did it have a negative effect on the growth of the economy in general. So we need to interrogate that, and then we need to make proper provision for that kind of problems that seems to be man-made. Is the answer to that that we did not provide for an effective planning framework? Or is the answer that there has been too much government interference into the operation of Eskom, for example? Or is the answer that we are too reluctant to take firm decisions, either as politicians or as managers of the utilities? So Cape Town itself was characterized by a chaotic situation during 2005. But some of the positive effects of that was in fact identified in the fact that there was now, on an emergency basis, energy efficient technologies introduced as part of the energy mix to try and mitigate the losses that we've experienced in Cape Town, for example. And we are then saying that if we have a more concerted energy efficient strategy, for example, in South Africa, would that not assist, particularly with your coastal regions, energy supply in electricity in particular? So at a household level, Chairperson, and this is why we are saying our members in COSATU, in the rural areas, are really feeling the brunt of this energy poverty. Food rotted in freezers as electricity went off. The replacement cost of those are huge. It had a destructive effect on most of the poor and working people, the working class in particular. And children went hungry through this. 14 January 2008, the national grid almost crashed, followed by enormous blackouts throughout the country. And it's the question that I raised with you. What really has changed? 25 January 2008 became known as the Black Friday in the mining sector. We anticipated if the rolling blackout started, there was again threats of mine workers having had to lose their jobs. Already we sitting with a problem in the construction sector that we also organized. We do not really know to what extent companies will be able to sustain workers in that sector when there's this long lead time before an approval of a project could be granted. So January 25, The Guardian reported that gold rose to about $920 an ounce, while platinum hits about $1,690 an ounce, up more than 5%. Once more, workers are the most affected. Thousands were laid off as mines ceased to operate for 5 days. It is reported that one company was forced to retrench 5,000 workers. And these are just some effects of the impact of the crisis that will happen, because if there's no production, there's no earnings for these workers. And it's not just them that are affecting, but it's the families in the rural areas who depend so much on the income from the site. The explanation of the blackouts have been provided, including government refusal to grant a green light to Eskom to build new power stations. As the energy crisis destabilizes the economy, as the destructive impacts on the poor people and the working class and crippled small businesses. And then very important to us is poor planning and a lack of, poor planning and a sense of judgment on the part of government and Eskom's poor leadership, particularly from senior management and the board, which takes day-to-day decisions in Eskom. So we found it very difficult to understand why learned and educated people in government and Eskom, you know, workers are not really learned. We only have experience, and we always try to articulate our experience as best as we can. We're unable to understand the energy needs was increasing and that the reserve margin was diminishing, and therefore new capacity would be needed. Incidentally, in going back around our engagement on the energy crisis, we noted that in 2000, 20 November 2000, we had a National Framework Agreement meeting, NFA meeting, in which we raised the alarm bells to government to say that by the year 2007 we will run into a energy an electricity crisis in particular, and we were not Sangomas, we're not qualified to do that, but we did predict to government that that is going to happen. So in the face of the energy crisis currently facing the country, government is continuing to support redundant technologies, the development of proven redundant technologies in the name of the Pebble-Bed Modular Reactor. We have now learned that more than 6 billion rand has been allocated to this project up to now, and it's continuing to increase. The cost is continuing to increase at an alarming rate. We have been propagating to say that if this money could have been used to build a few power stations, we might not have had the crisis that we are in today. The new estimated budget for the project stands at about 20 billion rand, and nowhere in the world has there been proof that the building of nuclear power station or even the development thereof is always within budget. Targets is always overrun, and we do have slides that we can show you, overrun by up to 286% in some instances. And that is statistics that we have had since the 1970s up till this year. We are of the opinion that we need to exploit our natural resources, such as the Medupi project. Although its cost estimation is about 78.6 billion, and we believe if greenfield technologies such as Medupi do exist, why don't we scrap the PBMR and build turnkey solutions for the development or for the exploitation of our natural resources, such as coal, such as solar, such as wind energy, and some of the biomass technologies that could be made available to increase your productive capacity in the rural areas. And then lastly, Chairperson, can I just say that before I hand over to Comrade Ghana, is that there's a serious concern for us in terms of perceived competition between our two state departments, the Department of Minerals and Energy and Public Enterprises. I will now hand over to Ghana that deals with some of the details. Thank you, Chairperson.
Comrade Derek and Comrade Ghana, I didn't explain to you, I thought you were listening. Presentation is 10 minutes. The questioning is 10 minutes. Answering is 10 minutes. So all the details, you can just go through them quickly. Then we can come back. When you answer, you may give a gist of your presentation. Good. We are only giving one stakeholder opportunity for presentation, not seven. And we know that this is a giant organization. And an organization with giant ideas is fine, but stick to my mandate.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. So we shall comply. We shall comply with the hope that the written submission is before the committee and they will be able to scrutinize. In terms of the remaining 5 minutes or so, Comrade Chairperson, I'll try and run through. in point four, we're talking about the contextual concerns that we have on the bill. And our premise is the basis of the policy positions that any proposed law would be based on. We note that we have an energy white paper of 1998, which in our view reflects the policy orientation of the macroeconomic policy called GEAR, on which it was approved. And basically we note that policy position has, you know, indicated a marked shift from the 1994 RDP program policy framework, which was well canvassed. And it's not only just there is a shift, there is an ideological shift in terms of the development of energy in the country. Because the white paper sought to take more of a commercialization approach in terms of the energy development and that service delivery. It's a matter that we are raising so that you can understand our call towards the end for a policy review in terms of the developments that are taking place in the energy sector. We also making reference directly to some of the provisions in the RDP document, which are the direct result of the famous document called the Freedom Charter. If some of us have forgotten about it, then we would need to dust it and resuscitate it so that we can then take a look at that, because it gives us a cue of way back in 1955, what did the people of this country, not a particular section, but the people of the country as a whole, say how and what is it that they would like to see in their country. So the RDP policy framework was premised from that document. And for ease of reference, Comrade Chairperson, we have inserted some direct quotations from the RDP in terms of 2.7. Now, in point five, we're talking about this thorny issue of the free basic electricity, which goes with other free basic services that, you know, our government has sought to introduce in the country since 1994. The disjuncture there is that there was this decision taken that a 50 kilowatt electricity per household per month would suffice, and particularly for poor households. And you can easily read here that the intentions of the advisors that advised our government at the time was not to lift our people out of poverty. It was simply to give them a taste of what is it to use energy. And it was not scientifically based in terms of, you know, on what can this 50 kilowatt be used. Because if you go to the households, people would only use this for lighting. When it goes to cooking and refrigeration, then that service is gone. Then they must pay. The other problem is that before they could access this free basic service, they must first pay. They must buy. They are given prepaid meters. Now we say you are not therefore addressing the issue of the poorest of the poor people in the country if we follow this kind of a process. We had hoped that the bill would talk to that matter. In our view, double that amount of electricity would at least go a long way in terms of solving this problem. But also there must be a paradigm shift in terms of how do we implement that. We understand, Honorable Chairperson and the members, that some of the policy dictates that we are following are through the advice of some learned, consultancies that we engage people from Europe, for example, where you take professors from Harvard University, and you ask them to advise you on how to deal with a South African problem. You have to advise you on how to deal with poverty. When they read about poverty in universities and in the books, they have never tasted what it means to be poor, and you rely heavily on them. That's why you have a problem currently with our national treasury, because their policies are not aimed at resolving and addressing the imbalances of the past, but is to basically satisfy supply the first world, you know, countries, because the premise is the advisors that are emanating from your Harvard universities and other important institutions in the Western world. We have no problem in terms of borrowing knowledge and experience from elsewhere, but also we must understand that there is a battle of ideas war that is being fought out there. Anything comes with ideological orientation. It can't be a neutral situation. So whatever advice that would be given to tilt the balance towards a particular direction. Chairperson, because you've given us very limited time, because this is quite an important matter. I mean, energy poverty in this country is still there. The DME can talk about the number of connections that they have done, but if you go back and check, all those people, most of them, they cannot use energy. It ends up at being only connected, and thereafter they cannot access the energy. So we need, therefore, to interrogate this. That's why an appeal has been made to yourselves as lawmakers that assist the government to basically come back to the basic national objectives of the country. In terms of the substantive concern in the bill itself, we were raising some general points, Honorable Chairperson, that the bill to us raises fundamental problems. Firstly, there are proposals for the establishment and creation of agencies and entities, and which will also be seized with functions of policy formulations. And also there's an element of making reference to the commercialization of the technologies, energy technologies that shall have been developed. Now, Chairperson, our experience in the country, across the spectrum of government in departments, this idea of agencies, the standalone, you know, agencies that are supposed to be servicing government, has created serious problems. For instance, in the energy field, we're talking about a monster called NERSA today. We're talking about a monster called ESCOM today, who do not understand their mandate to be that of being a public utility whose intention must be to render service as opposed to generate profit. The manner in which they run those institutions is as if they are running a Pty Limited company. And some of our legislative framework have given them that autonomy. That's why today the minister in this department must go and beg ESCOM that please don't increase electricity, because it will have devastating effects in the country. But that very NERSA is a public utility that is supposed to be answerable to the DME. And for us, as the working class, we have never elected any agency. We have elected government. And that government is led by the African National Congress. And that's where decisions of policy nature we are expecting must be taken, not by a standalone company. That's why you see this monster called PPMR is basically squandering a lot of the national resources, 20 billion rand, on a project that is still at the stage of piloting, feasibility. 20 billion rand. How many people that don't have houses in this country? How much can you do with that amount of money? And it's called also, it's got also an autonomy. It's called a free-standing, autonomous kind of an animal. So we're saying we are deadly opposed to then again reintroducing any agencies and entities. The second biggest problem is that we have, together with the ruling party, decided to enter in the process of building a democratic developmental state in the country. What does that mean? It means that we must have a strong state, and you cannot have a strong state without a strong bureaucracy. You cannot have a strong bureaucracy without having people with skills and knowledge that must then assist government in its function of central planning in terms of the development across the country. Now, if you develop an agency to be a standalone and you don't adequately remunerate public servants that are currently there, you will never realize the dream of a developmental state in this country, because you will have these agencies running the show as if they are a Pty Limited company elsewhere, and they would be paying market-related salaries like the agency here is being proposed. What about the strong state that we require it to be an intervention state so that it can then address, assist us in dealing with the national objectives of the country, of dealing with the poverty? You don't fight poverty through NERSA increasing electricity tariffs. When people are burdened with 30%, 50% of electricity, and you say you would be fighting poverty as a national objective as government. So we're saying, therefore, that we wouldn't support any creation of an entity that is proposed in this bill. And even if you look at its governance, it tells you that there will be a standalone board, which indeed will take the form of the current agencies that we see are operating within the country. So therefore, instead of creating new entities, we appeal that we must reintegrate those entities so that we build the capacity within the state for the state to can be able to discharge its responsibilities to the nation. So, Chairperson, on the basis of that, we have some specific proposals that would attempt to deal with that. I'm not going to read the details. The whole of Chapter 7 deals with those specific areas. Some of the chapters we are calling clearly for the deletion of the entire chapter, because we believe, on the basis of what we have just said, that there is no need for us to have, for instance, the modeling and planning agency that is proposed in the bill. We believe that that is the function that DME must undertake. Central planning must emanate from government. So you can't have a standalone agency that is charged with that kind of responsibility. Of course, we understand that there are some institutions that are currently in existence under the Central Energy Fund. We support those provisions. I think they are in clause 28. So long as their intention is to harmonize those bodies so that the function of the of research and development must be undertaken, energy efficiency must be undertaken. But of course, we believe that the renewable division must be relocated back into DME, because currently we understand that DME has got a fully fledged division on renewables. They've got programs that they are running, and therefore we see no need why we must then X that out into creating an institution. But in terms of the creation of SANEDI to harmonize and pull together all those formations under CEF, we have no problem, because that's migration of all of these standalone agencies that will be put under one umbrella. And Chairperson, I think Chapter 7 is about in the main on what we have referred to, that we have got serious problem in the creation of agencies and entities. We have a serious problem in policy formulations being located in agencies, because our view is that policies on any matter must derive from the government, and DME in this instance must be charged with that responsibility. You can't have a policy being worked out somewhere in a particular university or in a particular institution and imposed on government. Instead, that central function of government, being planning, must be relocated back into that. So those details, Chairperson, are about that in terms of assisting to basically have a legislative framework that talks to the need of the country, the correct structures that are required to address also our future situation in terms of building a democratic developmental state in this country. And unfortunately, ideologically, we would not shift from that position, because that's the right path, given 14 years of democracy, the rise of the poverty and unemployment in the country, and the increase in terms of the gap of the haves and the have-nots in the country. It tells you that something is seriously wrong. Whilst we have a right to go and cast our vote, but in as far as actually governing, there's somewhere where we're missing. We believe that when we look across government departments, the African National Congress government is not governing. Some consultants from somewhere are pulling the strings, are beating our government to take particular directions that are costly at the end of the day. So it's on those bases that we would believe that, yes, the bill is necessary, but I think it must be from within the correct framework paradigm. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, thank you very much.
I didn't know that you can. You know, look at my chairperson. He says he's now defeated before he can even talk. So that's an important input, precisely because it addresses, it complements the input we had before yours. So can we have members interacting with the input?
I'm very well covered. I think I must be a member of COSATU because most of the things they've said, I had already said them, you see. Especially in terms of Saneli and Harisaneri, we dealt with it. And we felt that Saneli is a very important development if Saneli is going to be incorporated within Saneli. And indeed, I did myself, didn't see much reason for NIMA when these structures are oriented in this fashion. But I also saw the need of this act in terms of modeling the framework, the energy planning of our country. I think that's very important. But I want to just get, you said something which I want us to interact with, especially about PVMR. You said so many important things for me, at least even for the committee. To rerun them. Can you show us those slides? Of, you said you have got slides of overruns dating back. You said dating back from when? It's going to get them. Okay. Yeah. I very much wish, because as far as I know, also I have always created. Yesterday we did engage with the committee with some stakeholders. Well, PVMR started as early as 1993, and there are many people who have been victimized when they questioned its existence. I wouldn't go to the details of that. But there has been an announcement, understandably. I wanted you to let us know if you've heard about that. That we see it the development of PVMR has been based on consultants in Germany, in Jülich, the Institute of Nuclear Technology in Jülich, called it's Jülich Nuclear Research Center. Myself, I have met the professors, fortunately, from there, who on the exchange told me that they abandoned the technology because they could not develop it any further. Now, I have understood that last week there was some announcement of that. But have you heard about that? That they have then there was a public announcement that the technology has failed from Jülich. Have you heard about that? So I would like you to address the committee on that. And now I have a number of reports myself also from some. People working for PBMR who are appalling, especially black graduates who went into that institution being promised to be trained in nuclear and something, and who are saying that they haven't been trained. In fact, I've got about now 5 letters that I've received. The latest was saying that actually they have now been, one of them was saying we must look for, we must try and introduce to work to other companies because PBMR is being dissolved into another new company because I think they think that somebody is hostile may dissolve it sometimes next year. So they are changing it into a new company which is still administered by Nexa somehow. It's from Nexa, that company. But it is going to be a new company. So there are transfers of employees into that new company. I just wanted to know if you know that, and if not, if you can try and get us information along that line. You have mentioned a very important point about DME and DPE competition. It is a very serious crisis, but I want you to go in details to us and elaborate what do you what we know ourselves, because it will enrich us to take it. We, in fact, we can tell you that in our committee, we once said that we want to know exactly, because sometimes when we want us come to account, we are told that it accounts to TPE, not to us. Well, when the people of public enterprise ask them, they say they account to TME. So they are just now a neutral. They can just swim around. When they are this side, they are in DP. When they are this side, they are in TME. And we can't run a country like that in a utility like ESCOM. So I just wanted you to also highlight that competition that already we were already faced with as a challenge. The last question is the energy access. The energy access is a very important part of it. I just wanted also to add to what you said that if we develop this act, we must really enshrine some clause that guarantees energy access to the disadvantaged in a certain very well worked out way. I think that's a very important contribution.
The Robs goes back to you, Kosatu.
I'm going to ask my comrades to respond to some of the areas I missed now, some of the questions, while we're getting just these slides. In terms of the overruns on the nuclear development elsewhere in the world, so I don't know if Fred...
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Chairperson, maybe let's take the matter of the DME and TPE competition. This competition is based on the policy directions to ESCOM. You find out that within DME, they are charged with the responsibility of developing policies for energy. And because ESCOM is managed in terms of shareholder arrangement by TPE, also they get themselves deeply involved in terms of also developing policies. Last time we engaged TPE, we were so amazed how far down the line have they gone in terms of planning for something like 20 to 25 years in terms of the energy development. And their emphasis has been bias towards nuclear development. And on one hand, you have got DME policy proposals and positions on the electricity master plan, on the renewable policies of 2003, and the energy efficiency, you know, policies that were also agreed upon. You've got the current draft nuclear policy, which has just been approved by Cabinet in June. Now, those are driven by DME. On one hand, you have got TPE doing its own things because they take the point that ESCOM is accountable to them. On the other hand, DME has got a fully-fledged energy, you know, division because it's a Ministry of Minerals and Energy. Now we see that as a serious disjuncture. That is why also you now see us having a serious problem in terms of how ESCOM is managed, because they basically would not take cue from DME. They would take cue from TPE when they like, and they would take cue from DME when it suits them. So we feel that kind of an arrangement is completely, you know, affecting negatively the service delivery on the ground, and therefore that's why I'm going to venture into something else now. That's why our view and belief is that if there is a public utility created to fast track service delivery in any ministry, that public utility, in our view, must be accountable directly to that ministry, so that you don't have this problem of, you know, being in between. For instance, purely ESCOM would have been, in terms of clear logic, been accountable to DME, because the Ministry of Energy is located there, and that ESCOM is central in terms of energy development. So that is that kind of a situation that we are making reference to in terms of, you know, this competition and confusion that gets created. And in the main, it also builds in arrogance on the part of ESCOM, because they know that they are in between. Sometimes they would argue that they are answerable directly to the presidency of the country and the cabinet. And now you find out that they seem to be, you know, untouchable, and because there is no political administration that basically holds control over them. Hence, we feel that in the new administration, if it goes according to what we would want ideally to see happening, is that we must have alignment of these public utilities in terms of their line ministries, as opposed to them standing on their own, and which might mean that there's no job for a minister of DPE, because frankly speaking, that ministry was created as a precursor for privatization of a number of public institutions that we hold in this country. Because what else? Because since it was established, all its forces have been driving towards, you know, the greater role that must be played by private sector, the accommodation of the private investment and so forth, nothing else. So in line with our, you know, agreement with the policy of the development of democratic developmental state, we would see that there's no role for that. Would you want to the retina?
Chairperson, the slide is part of a very broad presentation that we developed, or it's our own position document dealing with all aspects of the energy sector. But this particular slide is just the experience on the construction of nuclear power stations between the years 1966 and 1977. Where you can see the last column on the right shows the various overruns between those years on what the estimated cost was in the second column, and what was the actual overnight cost was in the third column. So you can clearly see between 1976 and 77, 269% overrun is the latest. That's just an indicator for you, and these are not our statistics. It actually comes from universities, from various operators, and this one in particular is the U.S. Energy Information Administration. That slide shows you actual experience that since 2002, the dollars that are quoted here are in the 2002 dollar. Category. So the only plants that are built from 1994 onwards are those in Japan, South Korea, and the last one in Finland has just been stopped due to problems around the concrete, the foundations that were there. But the plant there is what is called the new generation three. Plant, quite a new technology, is called the EPR, the European Pressurized Reactor, and you can see the cost of there between year 2010 and 2011. It's going to range between $2,500 per kilowatt and $3,000. There's another slide that I would like to I'm just going to go to the beginning. This slide is very important for us to look at, because when you look at that slide, the blue shows you the energy use for the various sectors. This is in our economy. This is South Africa. And the red shows the energy cost, the actual energy cost. And you can clearly see that when you look at the industrial column, the blue column there, in terms of energy use,
then it's the highest user of the energy. But what is interesting to note is that the red column shows how much they pay for that electricity or energy that they use. Now look at the households, for example. It clearly shows that the households are subsidizing the industrial side. So again, this is not our own statistics. It comes from your own statistics in some of your departments that we've compiled in the manner that it is. Now this is the barometer for us that we say, are we addressing the inequalities of our past? You know, what we inherited from the previous regime, and what does our policy regime assist us to deal with this inequalities as it is manifested in that sector? Because look at agriculture, where still close to 60% of our population are either in the rural areas or working on farms. And those are the most destitute areas that we looked at. Again, clearly subsidizing, the industrial sector. Key question is how much of the wealth created in your industrial sector is repatriated back to those areas that are actually subsidizing those. And I think those are some of what we are trying to say we need to confront as policy challenges, and that our legislation must enable us to deal with this inequalities as it is manifested there. So those two slides is quite important for you to make the right choices at the end of the day. Thank you.
I am going to suppress everybody, no chance, nothing. Yes, that was what I was about to say. Yeah, because I wanted Kosari to make that slide available to the committee. If it's available, then it's a public slide, so it's available to us, it's available to stakeholders. And I don't want to repeat. I think Kosari said it mouthfully. They've done their research, they've done their work, and I'm sure that most of the stakeholders coming here, they actually add value into this process. So our work as parliamentarians will be easier. The other issues, obviously, we will not do COSATU, is to influence policy towards socialism or communism. I can't do that. The ambit of the economic ideological inclinations in South Africa, they are still residing within a capitalist mode of production. So everything you want to do, you make as much compromise as possible to manage the economic system. So those are improvisations we make so as there can be harmony in making sure that the poor of the poorest benefit, in making sure that the entirety of society benefits. But African National Congress, no, I'm just saying we're trying to improvise harmony, of which when you talk of the mode of production, it's not possible. It's unachievable. It's not possible. So the COSATU can bear with us up until society moves towards a political and ideological direction, which will make it possible for everybody to benefit. So it may not be next year. It may not even be 30 years' time. But organizations and people should make that movement possible. And I'm sure that with the presence of organizations like COSATU, the Communist Party, quite a lot of public organizations which can make inputs towards that direction. So I just want to thank you for making this presentation. It was eye-opening and it was wonderful. We are going to have a group called For a Safe Tomorrow, because it has been here. I wanted to call Pelindaba, but Pelindaba came late. So you'll present after the For a Safe Tomorrow, so you can occupy the position. So when are you promising us to get the slides? Oh, no problem. Just.